Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, it's another edition of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant. Hi there, Paul.
Hi, Mark.
Good to see you once again. Hey, last few shows you've been talking about common questions. Last few shows were about the myths of estate planning.
Right.
Getting into more common, just basic, everyday questions people have about estate planning.
Yeah, these are things that we hear all the time. And I really don't want to call them Paul's pet peeves. I could thunk naming the three P's because they're really honest questions. And people come with all sorts of different ideas. They hear things from their past experience. They hear things from what they've seen on Google or what they've heard from neighbors at church. There's so many different thoughts. There's so many things that are just wrong that I would love to start clearing up and making sure we get right answers for those who are listening. See, that's the thing, is that we need good, solid, right answers in order so that we can make up our own mind, determine what we need to do for ourselves and for our family to make sure we're well taken care of. Because remember, estate planning has two major components. The first one most people miss, which is I need to make sure that I am well taken care of during my lifetime. What does that mean? Well, if you ever have a problem in life, a health incident to where you are going to encounter a disability or an incapacitation, that means your estate plan needs to step up and take action. Who is going to manage your assets? Who's going to make financial decisions to sell your home or to do whatever else is necessary? Who's going to make proper medical decisions? All of these things are very, very important to make sure that each individual is well taken care of first. That's the first step. Then estate planning, what most people see is, well, I've died. And so now what do I do? How do I get my money? How do I get everything off to my kids so that they can spend it? So, but maybe that's not the vision that you really want, which is just to hand off everything so that your kids can spend it. Maybe there's certain circumstances that would raise to a different level. If you have a special needs child, if you have someone who just doesn't do well with money and you need to protect them, or if you have tax issues and you'd like to make sure that your tax issues are resolved, maybe you would like to avoid probate. There's so many other things to talk about when we discuss estate planning that we need good information so that we can make sure that we have that information, sort through it, and make a good solid decision for ourselves and for our family. So let's take some of these questions and make sure that we can get solid, good information. And what do we got first?
Well, I think it was also one of the top myths, but let's kind of restate some of your thinking on this subject. Big question is, I don't have a lot of money. Do I really still need an estate plan?
Yep. And so that is a myth, and it is one of the more common questions that we get as well, which is that question avoids or doesn't account for the very first thing that I just said, which is we need to make sure that you're well taken care of. So if you have a health incident, then you need to make sure that you have estate planning documents that will match that necessity. There is greater than an 80% chance that you will experience some type of health emergency that will require someone else to help you during that time. Now, that stat is if you're 65 years and older. So if you're under 65, I don't know what your stat is. However, I know your stat if you're 65 or older, which is you will experience some type of health emergency or need for someone else to help you. Do you want that person's experience, the person who's going to help you, do you want that person's experience to be as smooth as possible? If the answer is yes, even if you don't have much money, then you need to have proper estate planning. You need to have documents that allow that person to be empowered so that when they go to the bank to write a check or they try to assist something with your finances, that they don't run into a roadblock and add angst to the already difficult scenario because now they have a loved one that they're taking care of and is experiencing a health issue. That's already stressful enough. Let's make sure that we have proper estate planning documents that are up to date and ready to go for the person who is going to step in and actually assist you. So, yes, everybody needs to do estate planning, regardless of how much money you have. By the way, that means anyone who is of legal age. So in Washington, the legal age is 18. You're shipping your kids off to college? Congratulations for that big bill. However, you need to have estate planning wrapped around that child's life. But let me say this. The children of today are experiencing more anxiety, more mental health issues. They are experiencing deeper relationship issues than maybe what we've ever seen. I'm in my mid-50s. Don't tell anybody, but I'm in my mid-50s. And I just remember growing up that looking around, nor my experience in life, didn't have as much anxiety and difficulties. Suicide rates, heartbreakingly, are up in 20-year-olds. I mean, they've barely started their life and they're contemplating taking it. And so there may be a time, even if your child is following after the heart of Jesus Christ, that they may experience a difficulty at a younger age that we never contemplated. So let's be wise. Let's be wise over our own children. And let's make sure that anybody who is over the age of 18 has proper documentation, because if they end up in a health emergency, running into the hospital and yelling and screaming that I'm the parent may not be good enough. Records are not disclosed, specifically in mental health. There are walls that people have to go through. So let's make sure that we get everybody with good, strong documents, because it's about living life to the fullest and making sure that you can be well taken care of here and now that makes estate planning so valuable and so critical. So it's not about money. Yes, it could be about money, but it's not just about how much money you have. Everybody needs to have good estate planning, whether you're young or whether you're old and anywhere in between. Everyone needs a good estate planning.
Okay, let's move on to another common question. I can do an online will. Is that good enough?
Well, how about that? That's fantastic.
Is that better than nothing?
Well, boy, I love it when you throw that additional question in there. Thanks, Mark. So look, yes, is something better than nothing? I would always encourage somebody to express their voice in one way or another. So giving some direction is better than nothing. But is that better than sitting down and actually discussing what your vision is and what your needs are with someone who can put together a document to ensure its legalities and make sure that it's properly set for you and your family? Well, that's what's necessary. So, yeah, is it better than nothing? I'm always going to be about someone having some documentation around them, whether it is basic or whether it's more complex and you need trusts, everything in between. Something is better than nothing, but I've seen a lot of documents in my years of practicing law, and there's a lot of bad documents out there. So they're templated, and really all you can get from an online do-it-yourself mentality is a cheap, basic will that says, leave my money to whomever you're going to leave it to. So it may not have specific or right court instructions like we need in Washington State to ensure that we have non-intervention powers and no bond requirements. It may not have proper instructions, specifically if you are in a blended marriage, a second marriage with multiple children from each side. Those are very complicated, difficult scenarios to walk through. And likewise, if you get something from online or if you're doing it yourself, my bigger concern is, did you properly sign it with the with the necessary witnesses? So you don't need a notary, but you need witnesses. And the witnesses need to make a specific statement in order for the will to be presented to the court without dragging the witnesses in to testify that indeed they signed it. So there's multiple things in Washington that I would be concerned with somebody taking the do-it-yourself approach. Now, the do-it-yourself approach is cheap, but just for a moment, let me get on a little bit of a soapbox here, because which is, look, in some areas of your life, you really got to stop being cheap. This is one of them. You know, you need good advice. This is about your family. This is about your assets. And again, going all the way back to what we've talked about so far, this is about your own health, about your own financial documents being protected and actually utilized for your best interest. Why would you not want to make sure that that was done well for yourself, for your spouse, and for your family, or for just whoever your beneficiaries are going to be? Even if you don't have kids, you need to take care of yourself. So in the interest of self-preservation, even, let's make sure that we get good documentation. It astounds me that somebody can drive up to my office in a $30,000 to $50,000 car and then balk when I tell them that they need good estate planning, so here's the price I'm going to charge you. That doesn't comprehend in my brain that you're willing to spend more money on a car than you are your family. Now, I know I'm digging deep here and causing even a little bit of emotional pull chain here, but this is really what my belief system is. You're doing this for yourself and for your family. So, I don't know.
What about the end of life documents and that part of things? Can you get those things online?
You can, but again, are you interpreting the question properly? And so, look, that's a good place to start as well, which is, what does everybody need? Everyone needs a will. So if you go online and say, well, I just need to get a will, maybe you don't get the financial power of attorney. Maybe you're not getting the healthcare power of attorney. Maybe online that healthcare power of attorney doesn't have proper language to support mental health that I just talked about. Mm-hmm. In my office, we'd create a secondary mental health power of attorney, because it's a different statute in Washington state. There's HIPAA releases, and yes, there's end of life documents, and there are some very specific questions within that document that we need to answer and actually talk through. You may not be surprised, but when I ask people questions about how long do you want to be on life support, that's a longer question. That's a longer discussion with clients. So if you don't have that sounding board of experience to talk about, this is what the question means, these are the different things that we want to accommodate for, then are you answering the right question in the right way? So I am always going to be in favor of getting a professional voice and a professional viewpoint. Look, if you don't like me, that's fine. Get somebody else, please. I beg of you, get professional wisdom. In the multitude of counsel is wisdom, not just doing it yourself. So we're going to push against the very word of God in Proverbs if we just have the mentality, I can do this on my own. You can't. That's why the Lord has given us a body, so that we can have wisdom together. Go get wisdom and get appropriate wisdom for these issues. So yes, all these documents are necessary. And if you try to do it on your own, I'm concerned that you will miss a critical step, and then not just the critical document, but also a critical voice of wisdom within making that decision for you and your family.
Okay, people want to get some help from you. How do they get in touch with you, Paul?
Head over to legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts. There's educational workshops coming up soon, and there's ways to communicate with us. So head over to legacyandfaith.com.
Okay, back with Paul Grant and more common questions in estate planning in just a moment.
Hi, this is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show. Hosea 4:6 says, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." God's people need to be fully prepared in managing their finances and ensuring that their wealth is properly transferred. It is our passion to bring this knowledge to the body of Christ. If your church would benefit from having a financial and estate session that is biblically based, then I encourage you to reach out to us so that we can help design and implement a specific and strategic session for your church. Or if you are interested in estate planning services, then I likewise encourage you to reach out to us. You can go to legacyandfaith.com and receive all the information you need. Again, go to legacyandfaith.com.
Many families realize that with the passing of each generation, their family legacy is disappearing and they're feeling regret. To alleviate this heartache, Memories Worth Telling writes their family story and creates a beautiful heirloom book to preserve their unique history. Go to memoriesworthtelling.com to schedule your initial consultation and learn how they can capture your legacy. Once again, that's memoriesworthtelling.com.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant, and continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, Paul is tackling common questions in estate planning this week, and we're up to another common question, and that is, if I have a will, then will I avoid probate?
Right. Probate is oftentimes on people's mind.
And what is probate? Why don't you give us a definition of what is probate?
Yeah, very good. So look, the probate process is that if I have assets that are titled in my name, when I die, then I need to move them from myself to another person. However, as most people would probably already know, I can't sign my name if I died. So therefore, I have a conundrum, which is I have something in my name, but I have to get my name off of the actual asset. So there's a couple ways that we can do this that avoid probate right out of the gate. So number one, if you are married, there's a high likelihood that you have your bank accounts in the name of you and your spouse. So that means that's a joint asset, or your home is in the name of you and your spouse. So anything that you have titled jointly means that the last one wins. So if you die, then your spouse, who is a joint owner on the asset, by law, will take over. Now, there's different ways to hold jointly held title. And so I'm not going to get into those, but on a basic premise, typically, not always, but typically what happens is that if you die with an asset that is jointly owned with somebody, that whoever that asset is owned with will have the legal right to then take that asset. Now, there is a way to hold jointly held things that do not have a right of survivorship, that you actually have control and would fall back to the estate planning mode. So even if you own something jointly, you got to be very careful. So the general presumption is that if you own it jointly, that person who owns it will own it automatically and you miss probate. Another way you can avoid probate is with a TOD, a transfer on death, or a beneficiary designation. So those two terms are synonymous with each other. So what that means is that when you open up an account with a financial institution, there is language in there that says, financial institution, if I die, do this. Well, I know you don't read those contracts because they're really long, and you just sign them and you open up the account because somebody told you to open up the account, the bank, the financial advisor, whatever it is. But in there is a transfer on death clause. And so if you name someone, then by law, because it's a contract, the institution must carry out those instructions as long as the beneficiary designation was done according to the contract. That could be a tricky thing, because what if they don't get it? What if they don't approve it? I've been in circumstances to where they try to fight me on that, well, we didn't get this beneficiary transfer document. We didn't get the document that aligns so that we can actually follow the instructions. So it has to be done properly. Double check your beneficiary designations. Make sure that the institution sees exactly what you think is going to happen. Make sure an ex-spouse is not on there, by the way. That's always a good place to start. So that would be for life insurance policies primarily. So if you have a beneficiary designation, the institution must follow that, and that therefore trumps going through probate. So there's a couple ways that you can avoid the probate process. Mm. Now, if you have not utilized one of those more mundane tools, which is joint ownership or transfer on death, then we need to get a legal way to have your name removed from an asset and that asset transfer to the people that you intend for it to go. So when you go to probate, we present a will. That will then does four things. It names guardians if you have minor children. It tells court instructions, in other words, the legalities. It tells us who's going to close your estate. A personal representative or executor is the name of it. And then it tells us who gets the property. So the court is empowering your personal representative to sign your name. So think of the probate process as a power of attorney for when you've died. Because a power of attorney ends as soon as you die. That turns off. It legally shuts down. A lot of people think a power of attorney actually extends past death. It does not. It immediately ends when someone passes away. So now the power of attorney can't sign your name because you've died. So now they need to be re-empowered, or the person that you've named needs to be re-empowered with the legal authority to sign your name because you've passed away. That's the probate process. That's what we're doing, is we're getting court orders that says your personal representative can act on your behalf, and that they take an oath to then follow legal procedures to make sure that creditors are paid, and then make sure that the beneficiaries actually receive what they're entitled to receive. So they have an oath to take that says, I will actually abide by the law. So this is what's taking place in the probate process. And actually, you heard the first question you asked was, if I have a will, do I get to avoid this probate process? Actually, if you have a will, you are driving your estate towards the probate process. That is the purpose of a will. Mm. It is to empower your personal representative. And so actually, when you have a will, you are not avoiding it. You are driving your entire estate there. So then you might throw up your hands and go, well, fine, then I won't do a will. How's that for you, Paul? Well, that's fine, but that just means that now you have lost your voice. Now, anybody who wants to be the personal representative and is in the bloodline in certain categories can possibly step up and try to gain authority over that process. And they still have to go to the probate court to get empowered. So it's the same exact process, but now we're going to use a different statute that says, now if somebody died without a will, here, Washington State has determined what's in your best interest, and we're going to follow this. So there's the difference between having a will and not having a will. They both drive you towards the probate process, but just in one of them, when you have a will, you have named who is going to close your estate, and you've named who gets what and how much, versus in without a will, you have not used your voice to name a specific person. So multiple people could try to come and actually take control of the estate, and you have not named who gets what. Mm. So there are dangers, again, specifically if you're in second marriages, specifically if you're in blended families, specifically if you have his and her kids. You may actually want your current spouse to have the luxury of utilizing everything that you guys have built, but that may not be the legal result if you do not use your voice. So the probate process, whether you have a will or don't have a will, is driving the entire process to empower an individual so that they can pay your creditors, and then distribute your assets to the appropriate individuals, but someone has to be empowered to sign your name. That's what the probate process is doing. And then we're making sure that everyone is treated fairly, including creditors. So they have as much right to make a claim on your estate as your heirs do. So there's the probate process. And no, having a will does not sidestep the probate process. It actually drives you to the process. So in review, are there ways that I can avoid probate? Yes, you can make sure that all of your assets are jointly titled. Please don't bring your kids on in this scenario. There are multiple dangers in having your children come on to an asset with you. So having joint ownership, having beneficiary designations, or utilizing a revocable living trust when it is properly designed, when it is properly administered, a revocable living trust can avoid the entire probate process as well. So if one of your main goals, which is a main goal of many people, which is I don't want to be beholden to the court process. I don't want anyone to go through that. I want a private family closing. Then that is very possible. We have to use a different technique and make sure that even if we use a will, so look, we can use a will and fully avoid probate, but we have to do it strategically. And I would suggest that you need the voice of a good attorney that would help align everything with that goal of yours. Is it possible? Yes, it's possible. Is it easier? This is an opinion. Is it easier to use a revocable living trust to accomplish that goal? Yes. So that is Paul's opinion, is that it's always easier to use a revocable living trust to avoid the probate process. But we'll get into that next show. So there's a little bit of a teaser. Come on back next week. Let's talk more about these common questions, and we'll kind of discuss more about how to avoid probate and what tools and instruments there are to do that.
Okay, yeah, we've been looking at some of the most common questions in estate planning. We'll continue this discussion next time. People are intrigued, though. They want to find out how to get some help from your services. How do they do that, Paul?
Head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts, ways to communicate with us, and upcoming educational opportunities. Head over to legacyandfaith.com.
Okay, always great stuff. The Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant here on KCIS.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.